Animation Meditation, the weekly deep dive podcast on all things animation. My name is Andy, and with me, as always, is my lovely co-host, Nadia. How are you doing today,
Nadia? Hello! I am
tired, but good. I was hoping for more snow over the weekend. My dad texted me and was like, you're supposed to get 13 inches of snow! And then we got, like, one. So that was a little bit of a disappointment, but other than that, I'm good. How about you?
I was also looking forward to snow, and then I woke up to rain and spent my day in the rain.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't actually had our first snowstorm this year, because, like, the other one, too, they were like, you're gonna get a bunch of snow, and then it was just really slushy and gross and mainly rain, and then the same thing happened this time, so I am...
No, we got a ton of snow right before Halloween.
Did we?
100% we got a ton of snow right before Halloween. I vividly remember having to, like, clean off my car.
Well, a little bit of snow is different than getting 13 inches of snow, though.
Yeah, but it was definitely, like, you could have gone out and, like, had a snowball fight kind of snow.
Well, fine. We have had a snowstorm this year, but I was excited for a second one, and I haven't gotten a chance to play in the snow yet. And as far as I'm concerned, if I don't remember playing in it, it never happened. Because I'm still a child.
Weren't we all? Well, speaking of being still a child, do you remember playing with your Legos as a child?
I actually never had Legos as a kid.
I also never had Legos as a kid.
I was a wooden block kind of gal.
I was hoping I could use you for this gosh darn hard transition.
Sorry to disappoint.
No, I was too poor to have Legos.
My parents were too crunchy granola. I had wooden blocks. So, also Legos are expensive, so, also,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, Legos are really expensive. I had a single K-Nex set that I was given for one Christmas, and I spent the next 6 years building and rebuilding that exact same K-Nex set.
Creativity! I don't even, what are K-Nex?
There's a little bar thing.
Oh, you mean K-Nex?
Yeah, K-Nex.
But, okay, we'll talk about this later.
There's a K,
but what?
And then a hyphen, and then Nex!
But they connect! So it makes sense for it to be K-Nex.
Yeah, K-Nex.
Well, after neither of us ever playing with Legos as kids, what was your first experience with the Lego movie like, Andy?
Wait, we're talking about the Lego movie?
Oh, I was surprised.
I just wanted to talk about our childhood toys.
Or our lack thereof. We're going to spend the entire podcast talking about how horrible it was that we didn't grow up with Legos.
This is an episode about our favorite log cabins.
The Lincoln Logs movie. It's a real psychological deep dive deconstruction of the Cabin in the Woods horror film.
But animated?
But animated. Terrifyingly so.
I mean, that is definitely a franchise I think would have benefited from being animated. You can definitely do a lot more things with animation.
Oh my god, for a minute I was going to be like, premise. The Lincoln Logs franchise.
Yeah, 100%. I'm serious. Think of all the things you could do with the Lincoln Logs. So yes, this week we're talking about the Lego movie. The Lego movie is, I believe at the time, Warner Bros' highest grossing animated film, directed by Phil Lord and Chris Miller. I'm going to be honest, I had to look that up to make sure I didn't flip-flop their names. Because I do that a lot. Did I actually flip-flop their names? I didn't actually look it up. What the hell are their names? No, I didn't. No, I said it right. Yeah, Phil Lord and Chris Miller.
Okay, nice. So the Lego movie is a film that follows the protagonist Emmett, who's just a normal dude, little Lego construction working man, who kind of gets caught up into this rebellion of master builders, who are individuals who want to break away from the structured, rule-following sort of dictatorship that their president, Lord Business, has sort of instituted over all of the Legos. So rather than following instructions, they want to be free and create and build what they want. So it's follows this ragtag group of buddies as they sort of search to find the piece of resistance, which is said to be the thing that can stop Lord Business's sort of evil final plan to freeze everyone in superglue. How is that? Did that give everything away? Was it awful? I hate summaries. Okay, so do you want to talk about your first time seeing it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I believe I saw this in theaters.
Yo, me too.
Around the week it came. And I was originally not on board when I heard the premise of the film was that it was just going to be around Legos. What brought me on board was the directors who had prior to this worked on How I Met Your Mother and Clone High. The cast was definitely something I was on board with. Chris Pratt, who at the time was in the middle of his role as, what's his face from Parks and Rec?
Andy.
Yeah, Andy.
You forgot the name Andy?
You'd think I'd remember that.
Good,
But here we are. Will Arnett was Batman as Will Arnett as Batman, I thought was amazing casting. Alison Brie, who at the time was still playing her role in Community. I'm of the opinion that Will Ferrell is a very good actor, despite the fact that not all of his roles are the greatest. But given the reviews upon its initial release, given the cast and the directors and a lot of good decisions from a writing perspective, I felt pretty confident that I could give this a chance and I would spend money on it going into a theater and watching it as it was being released, and I don't regret it. It was definitely an experience that I enjoyed. The movie itself is very good. The animation is very stop motion-esque. I believe at the time there was a lot of people who actually mistook it for actual stop motion.
Oh, wow.
The humor gets me every single time. Almost all of the jokes land and never really take away from the actual flow of the movie and the action. They never really steer away from the plot, and the narrative itself is very well put together. It's very tightly written. It's somewhat simple, but the characters involved, all of the interactions from there are well written and well put together, I feel. And I don't think that the narrative itself being somewhat simple takes away from the film itself.
Yeah, I really love that aspect of it, actually, honestly.
How did you enjoy the film when you first saw it? What was your experience with it?
I had a very similar experience to you. I think that I saw a trailer for it when I was watching a different movie, and I remember being like, ugh, like, of course they're just trying to, you know, make money off of this franchise that they know is gonna sell, and it's not gonna have any substance, and it's gonna be stupid and horrible, so I sort of played it off. And then my dad was talking to me, and he is, like, one of the most critical media consumers I've ever met. He's very skeptical, he's very nitpicky, he is just super, super critical about everything that we watch, and he was like, hey, have you heard about the Lego movie? It's supposed to be really, really good. And I legitimately was like, haha, funny joke, Dad, that can't be true. And he was like, no, the reviewers are really loving it, it's supposed to be really awesome. And I think I was in college at the time, and my parents drove up to visit me, and we all went out to see it in theaters together. And I just remember watching the opening sequence and being like, oh my god, I'm gonna love this movie. Mainly because of, like, the humor. There's just the opening sequence, so there's, like, the little opening sequence with that follows Lord Business, and you kind of get his evil plot, ha ha ha, prophecy, premise, and then it jumps to sort of the official start of the movie, and it shows Emmett, the main character, just kind of waking up and going about his day. And I just remember thinking that it was unbelievably hysterical, and that the movie had already started to show its sort of self-awareness and its wit in dealing with Legos as the medium. So, like, there was all this humor that was coming from the fact that the characters were legitimate little Lego people, as opposed to it just being, like, the medium that happened to take place in. And I think there's a part where the character's trying to do jumping jack, and obviously he's a Lego, so he can't. So his legs just, like, shoot out like he's running, and he goes, yay, jumping jacks! And I just thought it was really funny and hysterical and silly and goofy. And that kind of catapulted me into being in the mindset that it was going to be a good film, and it definitely didn't disappoint. I remember thoroughly enjoying it. I thought the jokes were on point. I thought that, well, the plot was this sort of simple progression. I liked that because it left a lot of room for individual characters to have different personalities and for the humor to kind of stem from those different characters while still sort of fitting within the progression of the plot. So I remember loving it, and I watched it many, many times after that initial viewing. The little theme song is stuck in my head quite often, and I loved it. I was very, very thoroughly surprised and pleased with the way that it turned out.
Yeah, here's a question I want to pose to you.
Yeah.
So this film was originally nominated for Best Original Song, but it was not nominated for Best Animated Film of the year that it came out.
Interesting.
Now, I'm of the opinion that this absolutely should have been nominated for it.
That was 2014. I'm curious what films were nominated.
So the nominations for this year were Big Hero 6, The Box Trolls, How to Train Your Dragon 2, Song of the Sea, and The Tale of Princess Kaguya.
Okay. Those are really good, though. Except I wasn't as much of a fan of the Box Trolls films than I thought I would be. Honestly, I think I enjoyed the Lego movie more.
Would you put the Lego movie above any of these films? slash would you say that it should have won?
It was Big Hero 6 the one that won. Yeah.
Big Hero 6 was the one that won.
Okay. So I haven't seen The Tale of Princess Kaguya, but I have heard really fantastic things about that one, so I can't speak to that. The Song of the Sea is also really good.
The Song of the Sea is amazing.
I feel like we've argued before about whether or not How to Train Your Dragon 2 is better than How to Train Your Dragon 1, so we won't get into that, but I do really love the How to Train Your Dragon franchise, so I understand why that got up there. I honestly do not remember enjoying the Box Trolls as much as I was expecting to, and I would definitely superimpose the Lego Movie into the best animated nominations instead of Box Trolls.
The other interesting thing is this is one of the very few years that exist where Pixar doesn't just come in and sweep it.
Yeah, what did Pixar... Oh, was that the year that Pixar came out with The Good Dinosaur? Because that would be hysterical.
I think that makes sense.
Okay, so I would definitely put the Lego Movie into the nominations over the Box Trolls.
I'm going to preface this by saying the Oscars are not to be taken seriously.
No.
We can look back at any given year, point at a specific nomination, and tear it apart very easily.
Oh, yeah.
The concept of giving these awards out the year they come out and just completely disregarding so many different aspects of these films is ridiculous. That being said, I watch every single Oscar-nominated film every single year. I watch the Oscars every single year. I'm obsessed with this, like, concept of rewarding and addressing and giving acknowledgement to different films for their positives and negatives, and it's just something that it's a part of who I am. I love it. That being said, Big Hero 6 absolutely should not have won Best Animated Feature Film that
really?
Year.
Why?
Big Hero 6 is not a good film.
I was not expecting this from you. I'm very curious as to why. I loved it.
So I watched Big Hero 6 in theaters. I'm not going to say Big Hero 6 is a terrible film. It is enjoyable. You enjoy what you enjoy. I watched it. I watched the entire thing. I didn't hate it. At no point was I like, oh, this is a bad film. But the more I think about that film, the more I start to just tear apart that film from the seams. I can't actually get into this without completely spoiling Big Hero 6.
Pretty much what I'm hearing is that we're definitely going to have to do an episode on Big Hero 6 because I am so baffled by this.
I have some major problems with Big Hero 6.
Oh, I'm super psyched because I remember really enjoying it. Everyone I've spoken to has really enjoyed it, so I am hella ready to hear an opposing viewpoint.
I'm a huge superhero nerd. I've read the Big Hero 6 comics. I went in knowing full well the history behind this franchise. I remember sitting down and like the credits started to roll and people were getting ready to leave and the person I was with was like, hey, let's go. And I was like, no, it's a Marvel film.
Yeah, you wait.
There's an after credit scene. And the person was like, no, it's Disney. I was like, yeah.
But...
And Marvel.
Yeah.
It's based on a Marvel franchise. We haven't even gotten our Stan Lee cameo yet. I literally said that in the theater. And lo and behold, the after credit scene is a Stan Lee cameo.
Yep.
I guess, spoiler warning for this six-year-old film.
Okay, interesting. So you would have put the Lego Movie over Big Hero 6. Would you have put it over all of the other nominated films?
Considering I have not seen these films in at least most of them for at least 5 years.
Okay.
I cannot say for certain whether or not I would put them over all five.
But you would definitely put it over Big Hero 6, which was the winning.
I would definitely put it over the winning.
Okay, interesting.
Animated feature.
Side note, would you put it over the Box Trolls?
Oh, 100%.
Okay, I'm glad that we both agree that that was not, and I was super psyched for that film. I love stop motion animation, so whenever there's a new film that is like stop motion, I get super hype, and I just remember, like, I completely unforgettable film. I don't remember anything that happens. I just remember coming away being like, was that it?
Yeah.
And it was.
I think I had the exact same reaction.
Yeah, whereas I went into the Lego Movie being like, oh, all it's gonna be is silly Legos, and then I was like, whoa, that was awesome, which is the exact way that you want to go into a movie. Like, you want it to surpass your expectations, which is just such a beautiful joy.
Do you think you had that experience because you went into the Box Trolls with higher expectations and you went into the Lego Movie with lower expectations?
I don't, because I did end up going into the Lego Movie with high expectations simply because of my dad's, like, comment about it.
That's fair. You were given a recommendation going in.
I was given
and
a recommendation by somebody
to...
who is deeply difficult to please in terms of films. And so when he says something is good, I'm like, like, oh, well, like, darn tootin' it better be. Like, he follows so much stuff and he reads all of these reviews. He has, like, specific reviewers he specifically looks out for the movie reviews because he trusts that, like, he's really into that stuff. So when he said it was supposed to be good and it got good reviews, I was like, all right, I guess I'm going into this movie with, like, super high expectations. But then, like, I still didn't really know anything about it other than the fact that I'd seen the trailer, so I didn't really know what to expect in terms of plot or any of that. I just, like, was like, it's supposed to be good. I trust that. And then, you know, it. I think the humor was, like, the big thing that really surprised me, because, like, you can expect a movie to be good and not necessarily know why it's gonna be good. And I think for the Lego movie, just, like, the jokes were such a forefront of its joy for me that in and of itself was sort of the big surprise for my end. Like, why I enjoyed it was the surprise.
That's fair. It's absolutely fair.
I also did not expect it to have a boss song. So as soon as Everything Is Awesome, which is, you know, again, the song that got nominated from the film, as soon as it started to play, I was like, oh heck, like, this is my jam.
Oh.
This is my 2014 mix right here. Also, it was written by Tegan and Sarah, which is just so funny because it's not the type of music I would associate with them in any way. So that was...
Yeah, it's performed by Lonely Island.
Yep, written by Tegan and Sarah, performed by Lonely Island. Like, this wonderful...
Amazing.
Mix of perfection that is,
yep,
like, bound to get stuck in any child's head and then bound to be the curse of any adult who has to hear it over and over and
so
over again.
Everything Is Awesome is an absolute bop.
It is fantastic.
I was gonna save this for the spoiler section, but it's not a spoiler.
Yeah, it's a song. It's 2 minutes. Go watch it. Chill out.
If you sit through the credits, there's a country cover of Everything Is Awesome.
You also get to hear the full song, which is super exciting. And there's this one part where they, like, just list stuff that rhymes. And then they're like, oh my god, it's like, blocks, clocks, socks, they're awesome! And it, like, you're just listing things and then saying they're awesome. And it's just, like, such peak humor.
But it's also, like, it works in the narrative as well, because it's supposed
totally
to be this, like, super pop. This is a song that's specifically designed to get stuck in your head. This is a song that's specifically designed to just be popular.
Yeah.
The second Lego movie also has a song that's very similar to that I think is actually really good. I'm not gonna lie to you.
I mean, I think Everything Is Awesome is really good, so I don't know what you're talking about, but I'll have to go look. I haven't seen the second film, so I'll have to go look up.
I'm gonna send you this song right now.
Oh, sweet.
And you're going to get the idea of the song within, like, the first 30 seconds.
I like how the thumbnail just says, catchy song! Alright. Oh my god, it's so loud. Oh my god. I love it! My shoulders are already bopping. Uh-oh.
I heard it the first
time. Uh-oh,
I'm
dancing.
I heard it the first time.
Oh, what's happening?
Like, this is amazing. This is exactly the kind of music I wanted out of this film.
I love it. Oh, Sokka likes it. Down, buddy. That was amazing. But yeah, oh, wow, they are great at songs. Holy heck. But yeah, that song came on and I was like, all right, this is perfect. I'm gonna love this movie. And then I did.
That being said, I absolutely understand why someone would not enjoy either of those songs. They are very annoying. They can be very obnoxious. They are very repetitive by design. Is this a song you would recommend to whom?
A song?
Under what conditions? Yes. No, this is a music podcast now.
This is definitely a movie I would recommend. I think, again, it's really well suited for younger kids as well. It has a super simple narrative. It's an approachable, like, visually approachable. It's Legos, so, like, the action is all very silly and goofy, and sort of the larger emotional themes of the film pretty much boil down to things that are, you know, very consumable and understandable for a younger, you know, elementary aged audience. But it ages perfectly. The jokes are super sharp. They're super smart. The plot is enjoyable. I really love just the animation. I thought that they did a fantastic job with creating something that, like you said, really felt like it was stop motion and Lego. It was just sort of, it's an all around joy. It is just a joy to watch. It'll make you laugh. It'll just make you feel lovely. So I recommend it to anybody, kids and adults. If you are an adult who has a kid, be forewarned that you will have someone singing a song in your house over and over again for many months. So heads up on that one, but the song is fire. So it's all good. Watch this movie. It's lovely.
Yeah, I would absolutely recommend this to most individuals. It's definitely a great family film. If you've got a younger audience you need to entertain for some amount of time, it's absolutely a film I will put on in the background while I'm doing other things. It's not a film that I necessarily will need to sit down and pay attention to. It's not necessarily a film that I get emotionally connected to like I have other animated franchises, but I do think the messages the movie tries to convey are very good. I do do think that the overall narrative and the animation are all very good. I don't know if I would recommend this to everyone. I think if you prefer your films be a bit heavier and be a bit more plot intensive, or just take themselves a bit more seriously, even if there are jokes sprinkled throughout, I don't think this is a film that you would enjoy. But if you're looking for something light, something easy to consume, and just all around just humorous and funny, I would absolutely say go for it. This is a great film to watch.
Yep, the humor is super smart for something that is definitely marketed towards kids.
Oh, absolutely. It doesn't talk down to kids. It keeps its humor relatively on point.
Yeah, and it's definitely a wonderful ode to people unlike Andy and I, who didn't grow up playing with Legos. There are all of these scenes that sort of show the different, I don't even know the words because I never grew up with Legos, but like the different, I don't know, like playscapes you can get, like the different themed builds, like, you know, pirates and fantasy and like Star Wars and all those things. It like makes reference to those different sort of Lego worlds, I guess. And, you know, a large aspect of it is just that Legos, they, you know, the characters build things out of Legos and they have a lot of joy in doing so. So if it's a toy that you played with as a kid and you maybe dismissed the film because you were like, oh, hey, it's just another, you know, thing, silly thing for kids to make money, it's definitely way more than
that. Yeah, it's not the Emoji Movie.
It is 100% not the Emoji Movie. I remember being deeply disturbed the other day because I had just in my head assumed the Emoji Movie flopped, and then I looked up how much money it made and I was horrified. So, but anyway, that's an aside. This is a great film. It is way more than the Emoji Movie. It is definitely made with care towards Legos and also with the understanding that its audience is smart and, you know, deserving of a good quality experience. So yeah, it'll make you laugh.
So from this point on, we are going to be discussing some spoiler heavy things regarding this film. If you have not seen it, it is available on HBO Max.
And I think Hulu, if you have the Stars add-on.
Hulu with the HBO subscription, I'm pretty sure.
Just kidding. Okay. Oh, wait, no, it's on Hulu if you have live TV.
Oh!
So there you go, folks.
I just saw Hulu subscription, and I assumed because it was on HBO Max that it was the HBO subscription.
Well, why would anything be logical at this point with streaming services?
Why would anything be logical at this point?
That's Period. True, I could have ended the sentence right there. We are in 2020, so yeah, there you have it.
This is the year of not being logical.
No. Speaking of which, there's this one moment at the very, like, near the end of the film where there's this, the kitty character who's, like, very sweet and bubblegummy and, you know, happy and joyful, gets really angry and just, like, totally turns red and gets really vicious and just really aggressively goes, "Why isn't everyone being nicer to each other?" And I saw that and I was like, wow, that is my entire 2020 mood represented in this tiny animated character, so.
No, some people don't deserve to be nice too.
That's true, but the question is, why aren't they being nicer to other people?
Yeah, why aren't they being nicer?
Why aren't they
being
nicer to other people? They would be deserving of my niceness if they were just being nicer to other people. You know?
No, please explain to me why these people are being nice to people.
I don't know, man. Systemic racism?
I just want to know.
Entrenched, deep entrenched sexism and homophobia?
I mean,
is it just the corporate greed? The lack of empathy? I mean, you know, is it the fact that they were probably born with no parental love in their life? You know, who's to say? It's just the general society that we've bred out of white supremacy. We're here to talk about animation, so
yeah. First off, this is not a politics podcast. We are not going to get political.
No, never.
Thank you, Nadia.
Never.
Let's not get political. Second off, I would like to discuss this film's commentary on the real world.
Okay, perfect transition.
You get these like passing jokes where like Emmett's like, "I'd like to buy a coffee," and they're like, "Here, $20," and it's like, great.
Yep.
There's another, which is like, yeah, we get price gouged. Franchises will milk us for all we're worth.
Yep.
But the one joke I really want to focus in on is when Emmett, after finding the piece of resistance, is captured and interrogated by good cop, bad cop. Liam Neeson.
Oh my God, that was Liam Neeson. Oh my God, speaking of prime voice acting, wow, this cast is everything. Dave Franco plays a random construction worker who has a single line in this film. So, you know, they really, even the extras in this movie are golden. But anyway, Liam Neeson, good cop, bad cop.
Anyway, Emmett is being interrogated and Emmett and good cop, bad cop, Liam Neeson, good Liam, bad Liam. Bad Liam's being all like, look, you know what President Business is trying to do. You're trying to stop us. You understand what Octane is. characters and what they're really trying to do, instead of this like floofy, helpful corporate structure that they have the veil of initially. And Emmett responds with, oh yeah, what? I wouldn't do that. Octane's great. They make all of our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then he proceeds to list a ton of stuff, some of which are surveillance systems, voting machines, and history textbooks.
Yes.
And I just think that we should have a nice little long discussion about who makes our history textbooks.
Oh my god, yes, no. That I remember, like, this time viewing, watching the film, that joke, I was like, oh my god, whoa.
Like, we're pulling this
like,
one.
That really hit.
Because, like, given recent events, this is who makes our history textbooks and how we teach history to our next generation is absolutely a discussion that I've had recently. And the fact that this is a joke that was made 6 years ago.
Yep, yep. It was ready.
And, like, this is, again, this is not something that's new. This is not, this. No. It doesn't surprise me that this is a joke that was made 6 years ago.
Yeah.
But this is absolutely a conversation that we should have had.
Yeah.
Well before this point.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's also super pertinent.
And we'll need to continue to have.
Yeah, especially because, you know, the whole thing about this year is all of these systems and structures that have always been problematic but have been able to operate on some level of just kind of covertly, I guess, are now becoming, it's like they're becoming very, what they do and how they manipulate and their agendas are becoming very overt, which has been a very interesting just kind of like social development this year. And again, I'm, you know, I live and was raised in a very liberal bubble, so this is not a universal statement by any means of the way that people are, you know, responding to this year or potentially putting in the effort to grow their minds. Ugh. Well, anyway, that joke was super on point and super hysterical. And I think also, especially the fact that as Emmett's listing all of these things, he's just kind of like, oh yeah, of course, like they're great, they make all this stuff. And it isn't until the end where he's like, oh, wait a minute, where sort of the pieces click together and you start to see the patterns and you start to realize sort of, you know, asking the questions of what agenda might this person have by creating something like a text.
But that absolutely happens in real life.
Oh yeah, exactly. That's why I thought like the joke was twofold. It was hysterical, the fact that it was super overtly listing all of these things that are, you know, obviously problematic to many people, and then also showing kind of the dawning realization of somebody who hasn't put those pieces together. And I think it's especially funny because, you know, saying everything out loud, it's so obvious, like, you know, of course, but that's the world. People see these things all the time and don't put the pieces together,
or
refuse to put the pieces together depending on, you know, the circumstances surrounding that individual. But yeah, that's totally something that happens all the time. We don't know everything. We can't be critical all the, you know, so much happens that we can't understand. Sometimes it takes putting all the patterns out there to start to see the connection and question the intentions of the larger groups in power. In this case, Mr. Business. Professor Business? Mr.
President Business.
President Business. I watched this movie 2 days ago.
Which, by the way, like, President Business, perfect name, given that this is a world and a concept and a story that is being told in the mind of a 12-year-old.
Yep.
Like, a child would absolutely, if you were to ask a child to come up with the name of an antagonist who is representative of a higher power and a functionally a tyrant, I think President Business is absolutely the name they would come up with.
100%. Also, I was totally expecting this conversation to go in the direction of the portrayal of bad cop. So, interesting twist on that specific joke, but I think even just the way that the film shows, you know, bad cop is super aggressive and angry and goes around and yells and kicks things all the time. That's also social commentary. Ayo. But
oh, absolutely. I was going to actually lead into that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, there you go.
Well, I was going to start out with calling you out on something that you said in our prior episode.
Ah.
Because I have this written down. Uh-oh. Where you said regarding 1-1 that you had never interacted with a character with this sort of dual personality.
Oh my god, you're right. Okay, but in my defense, good cop gets like erased in the beginning of the film, and for the majority of it, we only have bad cop.
No, but I did also want to lead into that because I think it's interesting in terms of like comparing these two, because 1-1 is the thing that,
oh my god, wait, what? I just put something together. So okay. good cop and bad cop as a singular character had the potential to be either, right?
Right.
But it wasn't until the larger power of President Business intervened to dictate the role that he should play that he became fully bad cop.
So what you're saying is that the overall system that our police system takes place in?
That our overall system is really messed up? Yeah, no.
Yeah, you know. That while there are absolutely issues that we should be resolving within our policing system, that it's the structures that created this that should also be addressed as well. Is something along those lines? Am I getting that right?
Yep. You right on the dot.
Cool.
100%.
I'm glad we could have this conversation.
Absolutely.
But anyway, back to my point about like narratives and how the characters are written and how it's interesting how you can compare these two characters, because you had mentioned that you were a little bit confused by 1-1 at first, and I feel, and please correct me if I'm wrong in this, but 1-1 is written in a way where their speech patterns is much more conversational within themselves.
Yes.
Whereas Good Cop Bad Cop is much more clearly continuing the sentence without really changing the direction that they're talking in.
Yes, it's more like they are a single individual with a single consciousness, but with multiple modes of expression versus
yes.
1-1, who is more like multiple consciousnesses who can sometimes take a connected space.
Yeah, and I think it's very interesting because these two franchises treat those characters in the inverse of that. Whereas in Infinity Train, 1-1 is treated as one specific character, whereas with the Lego movie, Good Cop getting erased by President Business is sort of treated as this sort of death of a character.
Interesting. I hadn't thought of that before.
Which is something that I felt that was incredibly interesting, especially because like we've already talked about 1-1 and that whole concept, and I think I wonder what implications that has in terms of this, just because you do get good cop back later in the film.
Yes.
And I'm wondering how that character changes whether or not you view Good Cop, Bad Cop as two separate consciousnesses, mm-hmm. or two separate identities, or if you view them both as the same character and...
Hmm.
I don't know where I'm going with that. I just thought that was something interesting to bring up.
I think really what Good Cop, Bad Cop does is it shows the sort of multitudes that people have the capability of being, right? Like we all have these often, well, I mean, I would say all, yeah, we all have these often dueling aspects of our identities, or just ways of expressing that seem like different, or like, I don't know, no one is one single clear cut thing. So I think what Good Cop, Bad Cop does is the severity of losing, what it shows is the severity of losing Good Cop is just as severe as what it means to lose or give up a part of yourself. And this isn't really getting into like the difference between Good Cop and Bad Cop in 1-1, but I think if we are viewing, and if the film views Good Cop, Bad Cop as a singular character, what it is really looking at, rather than the death of a separate character, it's looking at the death of a part of yourself. But I think it's interesting that it gives us that jarring feeling of the loss of an entire character, because we all kind of need those different parts of ourselves to be human.
Yeah. Anyway. I think Liam Neeson does a great job. It's good as Bad Cop.
Oh wait. Oh my God. I have a thing. I have a pattern. I just realized. Oh my God. Okay. So a lot of not all of the characters, but a commonality that I'm just now putting together amongst a lot of the characters in the film is this kind of dueling identity, because we have Good Cop, Bad Cop, who is essentially these two different expressions of the same person. We have Wild Style, who promotes this identity as Wild Style, but is Lucy and kind of is presenting in a way that is different from who she was raised as, I guess. We have Emmett, who has sort of this dueling experience as somebody who is just a normal guy to being somebody who is supposed to be special and chosen, to then going back to just being a normal guy. What is it? She just called Kitty? Mega Kitty? What is her? What is the kitties?
Unikitty. She's a unicorn and
Unikitty.
A kitty.
That's it. We have Unikitty, who has this sort of like battle between her wanting to be lovely and perfect and pink and sunshine and not deal with her emotions, and then we have sort of like rageful Unikitty, where she goes all red and crazy. Like all of these characters have these.
We have Batman,
who is then also obviously
who is
just
also Bruce Wayne.
Oh my God! Spoiler alert! Whoa! Batman spoiler alert, folks.
I don't think the premise of the identity of a given character is a spoiler. I'm fairly certain if we were talking about Batman Begins and I said Bruce Wayne was Batman, no one would tell me that was a spoiler alert. That being said, also a film where Batman is the is one of the protagonists, and Liam Neeson plays a relatively bad cop.
Oh my god, yeah.
Just thought I'd throw that little Easter egg out there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, and I guess you could say, I mean, we have Lord Business, who is this...
President Business?
Oh my god, we have President Business, who is then also just sort of the you know, representation of the little boy's father, which isn't like a totally separate character, but it's like that duality of who somebody is versus how somebody else might imagine them to be.
Yeah, it's a projection.
Yeah, exactly. And those are pretty much the main characters right there. So all of them are grappling with this sort of with these dueling internal identities.
Well, yeah, and like the entire premise of like the message of this film is really like choosing to be yourself, mm-hmm. and understanding that who you are and what makes you is what makes you special.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily need this destiny or this prophecy or this. You don't need to be anointed. You don't need a witch broad to throw a sword at you.
Mm-hmm.
You are what makes you special, and that's all there is. That's all you really need.
Yeah, and I really like that their expression of who you are allows for the complexities of things that might seem contradictory, because that is such a, I mean, at least for me personally, that is very much kind of a state of existence where you have different aspects of yourself that don't always seem to fit together, but are both just as equally important to who you are. And like, I don't think in the films with these sort of characters and their multitude of identities, being who you are doesn't have to be singular. It allows for it to be kind of messy and not always make sense, or to even be contradictory. And I think that that's pretty cool, and definitely not a message that I had thought about in any of my other many viewings of this film. Oh, that's so cool. I really like that. That makes me really happy.
Yeah.
Yay, Lego Movie.
There was one quote I wrote down that I'm not 100% sure defeats the purpose of the message in this film.
Mm-hmm.
Or not necessarily that specific message, but like the concept of being willing to go against authority figures and people who simply tell you to follow instructions without really allowing for a creative flow.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a point later on in the film where Wildstyle takes over the TV network to tell the world that they each are special in their own way, and that they are able to build without following these directions, and that they should to be able to fight against the suppressive super weapon that is currently gluing them all together.
Mm-hmm.
And she starts the speech off with, "You don't know me, but I'm on TV, so you can trust me."
Yeah.
Which, like, I take issue with, because it does kind of defeat that purpose of, like, you're simply replacing one authority figure with another.
Yeah.
You're not really...
I think that's definitely an example of a joke that is meant to be there for the adults. That is
that's fair.
Probably...
I think that's a, that specifically in... I personally feel that that's specifically in there because it is... this story is being told from the mind of a child.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that absolutely makes sense. That's exactly, like, the kind of sequence of events that a child would think.
Mm-hmm.
Given that situation, like, you are an authority figure, I should listen to you.
Yeah, but I do definitely see how in the context of the narrative that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah, it does kind of muddle the point that we're trying to make.
Yeah, yeah, because that's the thing, is like, if you have multiple people telling you what to do just because one of them is sort of like overtly right versus overtly wrong, it's that's not going anywhere. Ignore that, delete that.
Yeah, no, I think that is going somewhere. Like, if we're going to choose to follow an authority figure, we should choose to follow an authority figure who gives us a reason to follow them, not simply because they are on TV or because they are the president.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not because they are the president. Business.
Uh-huh.
The president business.
Yeah, of course. No,
president
no
business.
Other individual.
Yeah. No other individual involved in this.
No subtext here. This is just a clear-cut piece of discussion about the film and nothing larger.
Yep. No outside forces influencing these opinions. Nope. No, sorry. This has been a great escape from reality, hasn't it?
Wow, I love how the Lego Movie just really, you know, takes all the troubles away. Oh my god, wait, what?
I also did, following that, we sort of see that Will Ferrell and his son in IRL.
Do we ever get a name of the dad?
Sort of. Just, I don't believe the dad is ever
just
named.
Just for...
I believe the dad is only ever referred to as the man upstairs.
Okay, yep.
But Will Ferrell and his son use this narrative that the son has created as a stand-in for actual conversation.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. For the rift that has sort of been torn between them in terms of one's willingness to follow instruction, the other's want to express themselves creatively.
Mm-hmm.
My question is this health?
I think that is an interesting question. I think it can be, and I think, again, it depends on the different people within the situations, like, emotional capacities in that moment, right? Like, I think that utilizing this story as a way to bridge a gap that they don't know how to bridge, because one is an adult who doesn't even realize there's a problem, and one is a kid who probably doesn't know how to
doesn't necessarily understand how to
portray that they feel like they're lacking something. So I think it does allow for a bridge that might not otherwise have been built. Do I think that this means that the father and son should never have any emotional conversations? No! Right? Like, it is a continuing process of building up that emotional vocabulary, of building that ability to communicate feelings. Are you asking whether or not you think it would have been valuable for the film to have a more overt conversation between the father and son that maybe bridged that moment where the dad realized there was a problem, and then, you know, cutting to them playing? Because I do think that would have been useful.
I think where I'm going with this is, A, I'm not going to say that this interaction that these two have is healthy or not. That's people communicate in different ways. People express their love in different ways. There's no definitive answer to that question, which is why we're having this conversation. It's absolutely a conversation that's worth having. I guess my answer is more, this narrative sort of sets it up and acts like this is the solution, whereas I feel that there should be more follow-up to that, because if we're going to give the idea that people are able to insert these metaphors in their lives without actually having a discussion as to why they needed to have these metaphors there in the first place, it's sort of like this is step one of many more to come for a healthy relationship to flourish, whether it is the paternal relationship, a platonic relationship, an actual partnership. We should be able to incentivize actively talking and discussing our issues instead of using these stories and these means and these tools to address the issues that we have is great, but I do think it's just a step one, and we aren't really given a means to move forward with this narrative.
Well, I do think that the film definitely could have had space to show, even briefly, just them talking about it in more concrete terms, right? Like, there's, you know, the moment when the kid kind of tells his dad, oh, this is President Business, he's evil, he's gonna super glue everyone together, and then it kind of goes to the montage of, you know, the dad looks sad, and he's like, is that what you really think? And then they, you know, together take away the super glue and start playing and, you know, have that moment. And I do think that there could have been space in between for a more concrete conversation after the metaphor had bridged their ability to realize that there was a problem, and for them to both then be in that space where they both have voiced the fact that they were, that there was an issue that had come up for, hold on, sorry, I lost my train of thought. I do think that there would have been space in between those two moments to even just have a brief conversation for the dad to be like, how does it make you feel when you're not allowed to play with the Legos, and for the kid to be like, you know, to say like, it makes me upset, I feel left out, I want to be a part, you know, like the kid definitely would be able to express at that point why he was upset.
Or like, do you feel that this aspect of my, like this controlling aspect of my nature has any effect on your other parts in your life?
Yeah, and I do think at that point they would have been able to have an effective conversation. And again, like, it can still be simple and it can be short, but just for it to be voiced in concrete terms, I think there was space for that to happen. And I also think that it is really important, especially when you're dealing with like characters who are male and are often not taught how to gain that emotional vocabulary and expression that is really, really central to being a like functioning human. I think this could have been a great space to show that, right? Like, men teaching other men how to verbalize and how to feel and how to move forward constructively. I think that would have been very powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's exactly the direction I was going with that question.
Yeah, okay. No, I totally see that. And again, like, it didn't have to be long. It could have just been a brief conversation where they just acknowledged sort of beyond this imaginary world that there was an issue. And it even could have ended with the dad just being like, you know, that's, I understand, or I'll work on it, right? And that could have bridged then into them working on it together, which would have easily gone into that montage of them, like, you know, cleaning up the super glue and playing together and doing all that stuff, right? Like, that would have made sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, and again, this is, I do think that it doesn't completely derail the message not having that scene in there.
Yeah, again, we're
this
both
is
nitpicky.
Just a nitpick on my part.
We're both very nitpicky, like, critical people. Hey, that's why we can talk about this for so long. I am truly my father's daughter.
This film does have this sort of dichotomy between individuals who want to follow directions and those who believe that direction should be followed and are necessary for everyday life to proceed. And the other side, where individuals just want to create and be creative outside of the constraints of the status quo, which is a very interesting premise for the film itself. And I think the film does a great job of addressing that both can be beneficial so long as one is not imposing over the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think that they, because again, the entire beginning of the film is like everyone follows instructions, and it's the entire goal is that there's this evil guy, President Business, who wants to make sure that everybody can only follow the instructions. And then it gets into the whole like, he wrote the instructions in the first place, so are they even instructions that should have followed? But midway through the film, when Emmett is really with the Master Builders and they all try to build something together for the first time, it just totally fails because each of them are trying to build their own thing without ever communicating or creating this unified idea. And I appreciated that as sort of the catalyst for conversation of, you know, you can all be creative, but sometimes it is valuable and necessary, especially when you're working as a team towards a unified goal, to have a set of expectations or guidelines or conversation that allows you to build something together. Because it shouldn't just be everyone for themselves, go ahead and do whatever you want. Like, you still need to care about what those around you are doing and creating, to not just create something for yourself, but to be able to effectively create something with others and for others as well. And I thought that, like, that's a very short moment in the film, but I did really appreciate it as sort of the gray area in between only following the instructions versus completely disregarding it and everybody else to do whatever you want, you know?
Yeah, I do feel like this entire movie is sort of a love letter to the phrase, you can't break the rules until you know them.
Ayo! I flashbacks to saying that as an English teacher literally literally all the time. Oh man, this is actually really, really interesting. Holy crap. Can I go on like a little teaching tangent for like a second?
Please.
Okay. So most of my experience, I taught 11th grade English, and most of my experience of that time was trying to unteach the rules and constraints that my kids had been taught since elementary school. Like, that was my job. My job was to try to reteach my students how to think individually and creatively and freely without feeling like they had to stick to a set mold that didn't allow them to achieve what they needed to achieve in their writing. And it was so hard because for so long they had been told that they had to write in a specific way or in a specific format to be effective, that you had to introduce your thesis in a certain way, that you had to have a certain number of paragraphs, that you could only have the evidence had to be incorporated in a very specific way, which is 100% not true, as writing is something that is incredibly creative and fluid, even when you're writing academically. I love writing academically, and I think that it is just as creative as creating something, as, you know, like writing like a short story or a novel or a poem. Like, even if you're writing about something else or writing about an argument, you are making just as many choices as you would if you were writing a piece in a different context. But like, oh my god, I'm went on a total rant and I don't remember what I was trying to say. But basically, like, the effort it took to try to reteach students to trust in their own instincts, or to even be critical of what they were trying to accomplish, and then to pick or create a structure that would allow them to accomplish that, was really difficult. And it was one of the things that was, you know, totally disenchanting for me as an educator, because who wants to be a part of a system that pretty much crushes somebody's ability to feel like they can speak or take risks or use any ounce of creativity? Wow, that got real depressing. Ayo!
Ayo!
But pretty much, I'm like...
See, I think a quote that I've held fairly close to my heart for a while now that I think addresses the concepts that you're talking about, and this is from a board game designer,
mind you.
Restrictions breeds creativity. And, like, it's this concept that, like, we need these limitations around us. We need some amount of structure to be able to work creatively. And, like, being able to break that mold and break the ideals and structures that we have set within us while still playing within a certain subsect of restrictions restriction is very important in terms of our ability to create and express ourselves.
Yeah, because I think part of what was so disenchanting for me is that students had been so beaten down that they didn't even consider the fact that they could go beyond the restrictions, right? Like, they were so scared and concerned, mainly because of grades, which is a whole other system that I could just tear apart for like 5 hours. but like they weren't able to get to that place where they could question the structures enough to envision anything beyond them, you know? And that was, because it's hard when, again, like getting into structural things, if somebody doesn't realize that there is even a structure there hindering them, they can't think beyond that structure. If they just think that is what, you know, writing is, it's hard to envision what anything else could be.
Yeah, it's more than just understanding that the structure is there. It's understanding why the structure is there.
Exactly.
What purpose it
exactly,
is there.
Exactly, the purpose that the structure serves, because that's another thing about writing, is that when, you know, the structure of whatever you're writing is just as important as the content. The way that you format your sentences, the way that you organize your paragraphs, like all of those structural choices matter to your argument just as much as the content of them. They both serve a purpose, and that purpose is the thing that you are trying to say as a writer. So if you have a structure, and for many people it is also useful to have a structure if you need a structure and then you can kind of be creative with the content, or if you want to have set content and be creative with the structure, it's difficult to kind of like work with those simultaneously, especially when you're learning. But like, if you don't understand the function that your structure serves, it's going to be really hard to break away from that. So like, yeah, okay, a 5-paragraph essay could totally serve your purpose, and in that instance it is 100% valuable to utilize the structure that you have at your disposal, but you also need to be aware of what purpose that structure holds, and also when that structure is hindering what you want to say. And at that point, it's time to try to figure out another way to structure your whatever it is you're trying to create. Does that connect with what you were saying?
Yeah, no, absolutely. That is the exact direction I was going with that.
Yeah.
And I do think this movie does a great job of balancing that like teetering act, mm-hmm. in terms of trying to establish one or the other in terms of those views.
Mm-hmm. I think
it doesn't explicitly state any of these things, but it does allow for a great means of having that conversation and having that communication.
Yeah, again, this is very much a film that is approachable for young kids, so this is kind of the extra that you get as an adult who wants to have these conversations, or as, you know, somebody younger who wants to have these conversations. But they're definitely, the content is there for the conversations to be born out of, 100%. And I think it also breeds all these questions, not only about the merits of, you know, following structures versus being creative, when it is important to break away, when it is important to work as a team, and when you need these different things. But it also makes you question, again, not only what purpose do these structures serve, but who has created these structures and why? And is the purpose for these structures something that is beneficial to you as an individual and to the world as a whole? And at what point...
Yeah, it's also who created these structures and how do they benefit from the way the structure is set
exactly.
up?
Exactly, yes. Who created them? Why did they create them in this way? What do they gain from them being created in this way? Again, like all of these really large questions about power and about rules and about society, but also a lot of fantastic jokes.
Yeah.
Hey.
This has been a great distraction from the real world.
Yep. If you are an English teacher, definitely show this movie to your kids and then have a long conversation about how it connects to writing. 10 out of 10.
One of the reasons I wanted to make this podcast is just being able to like have these conversations and like what we can pull out of all of these different narratives.
Mm-hmm. And again, what you can realize that you have never realized just by talking to another person, right? Like, there's so much I pulled out of this film that I have never even thought of in an overt way or an obvious way. And just sitting down now, I'm like, oh my God, all of these ideas. So that's very exciting.
Great. That's great. I'm going to call that our final recommendations, unless you have any more you want to add.
Yeah, no, I'm super good with
that. So next week we will be discussing Big Hero 6, considering...
considering the fact that Andy has now given me a tiny taste of his opinion, which I was not expecting, and I am ready to hear more.
Oh, this is a conversation that I'm absolutely happy to have, and didn't realize I had such strong opinions about it until I remembered that it had won an Oscar the same year as this film. Hey. and B, Song of the Sea.
Very true. Oh my god, also totally separate, but they just came out with a new film that I'd be super down to do an episode on, called Wolfwalkers.
Yes, you'd mentioned that.
Heck yeah. I'm scared to watch it because it looks like it's going to be kind of sad, but a surefire way to make sure that I overcome that emotional barrier is to make me have to watch it for a podcast episode. So, in the future, heads up.
All right. Well, we have been Animation Meditation. You can find us at AnimedPod on Twitter and AnimedPod at Gmail. You have any comments on the Lego movie or anything? Anything that we've said regarding this film or anything that you'd like to say about Big Hero 6, feel free to reach out to us.
Heck yes. I feel like this is going to be a controversial episode, folks. Beloved family film torn apart by savage podcast viewers. Just kidding. I really loved it. So if anything, it'll be just us arguing for an hour. Hey.
Thank you for listening.
Bye.